Welcome in to Slapshot Radio on Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app. It is week 7 of quarantine. And you know, we're going to still talk hockey, doggone it. Tonight we talk to the bag chucker extraordinaire, Hal Gill, going to be joining us tonight. All brought to you by Day One sponsor Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, Carter Church from Weichart Realtors, the Andrews Group, your real estate expert in Murfreesboro, the largest wine and spirit store in Middle Tennessee featuring home delivery, featuring curbside delivery. It is Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. And of course, our friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries, Nashville, 3 locally owned and operated locations in Middle Tennessee. And, of course, you can shop them at lazyboy.com. I'm Paul McCann. Our co-hosts are former NHL coach and player Brent Peterson and the host of the Preds Watch Party, Zach McCann. Coach, how are you this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm going to have to cut curfew next week and just come and show up and be there with you because I can't take it anymore.
You know what? Bring it on. The kicker is
we'll get the bubble wrap.
It's so good. Really, no kidding. Get the bubble wrap. Get the we'll
bleach cocktails for everyone.
Absolutely. A little bit of shot of Lysol. Why not? Anyway, and of course, Zach. Here we are again.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. But we have actual hockey news to talk about today.
Actually, quite a bit of hockey news to talk about today. We got to jump on that. First off, it looks like Commissioner Gary Bettman gave a pretty extensive interview on Sportsnet in Canada last week, looking at some possible scenarios. How does the league resolve or resume? And Coach, you've dealt with this many times in your history as a coach. The locker room is almost a petri dish of interesting things that go on. When a team gets hit with the flu, it goes through the entire team in a heartbeat. Stomach virus, we don't have to go back much further than Detroit a couple of years ago. Coach, how would you control something like this in a locker room, especially knowing what's going on in the world?
I don't think you can. You just have to get lucky and do the right things and wash your hands and do everything that they've asked us to do now, because it's like you said, it's a petri dish. You got guys in a tube with wings on an airplane together, inhaling all the whatever air is going through the ventilation system there. Then you're in the same room on a meeting with a team. And shorter, smaller meetings are going on at the same time, and so it's just there's nothing you can really do to make sure everything's fine. So you do the best you can, and I think they're gonna go ahead and play the games without fans, and that's gonna be really hard. I think it was being the best of a bad situation, and that's all we can do when things like this happen. But I think that it'll be really hard to see it. A guy scores a big goal, and wherever we are, wherever you're at with the game, or wherever you're playing the games, it just won't be the same. But that is one of some of the scenarios they've been talking about lately, hasn't it, Ben?
And absolutely, Zach. You look like you can't wait to jump in on this one.
I'll be honest. Think of in the three of us. It's no secret that we work home nights for the Predators. Think of the people, non-fans, that you run into on a game-to-game basis.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
And these are just, essential personnel to making the game run. Mm-hmm. Not talking about, people who are there for the fan experience or, ushers or anything. Think of the sheer number of people that it takes to get just the hockey game itself going.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly do not know how you come back until there is a vaccine.
And I agree. I totally agree with that.
Because here's the thing. One player gets it. And you're doing, 4 locations or anything like that. Mm-hmm. At that rate, you have to quarantine every single person that player has come in contact with.
It was interesting, Zach, and you make a great point, because I was talking to a former National Hockey League coach, and he had some interesting takes on this, because it is, are you going to be testing before every game? Are you going to be testing before every practice? You have to. It's going to be fascinating to see how this comes together, but that was one thing, and we could probably fill the whole hour talking about that. I really don't want to go there on that, because a couple of other stories broke. First off, the one that just absolutely kind of floored me. Upheaval in Chicago. Ah, oh, you know what? That makes me so upset. I hate that.
Yeah.
But the Chicago Blackhawks fired their president today. John McDonough, the guy they brought in from the Cubs.
Who took them from just the absolute depths of attendance and rebuilt that franchise.
Fascinating that he gets fired. I mean, literally just broke about an hour and a half ago.
And it is said that both Stan Bowman and Jeremy Colleton will return next season.
You know,
they won the power struggle, eh? They won the power struggle there. The
yep.
power.
Well,
the power move.
The power struggle.
Did a great job.
You know what? Here's the thing, Coach. The power struggle may have been if your last name is Wirtz, you get a job because the interim president of the Chicago Blackhawks is Danny Wirtz.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you look at that and go, okay. I mean, John McDonough gets rewarded for three Stanley Cups. Mm-hmm. But I guess if you're, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, but I have to go here. There is there's a tweet I saw from a friend of Zach's who is a passionate Chicago Blackhawks fan and not the biggest Stan Bowman fan in the world. Says, you know, there's over 20 million unemployed and Stan Bowman's not one of them. I mean, that really, you know, it's interesting. The Chicago Blackhawk fans are beginning to get frustrated with what's going on.
You
know, and now it looks like McDonough is the sacrificial lamb.
You know, it's funny. One of my favorite movies is a John C. Reilly comedy called Walk Hard. In it, one of the characters has a phrase he keeps saying called, "The wrong kid died." And I think you kind of have a case of that here today. Honestly, John McDonough wasn't the one who panic traded players like Nicholas Jalmerson after the Predators swept the Blackhawks.
Yep.
It wasn't John McDonough who was responsible for getting rid of players like Artemi Panarin, who Patrick Kane still to this day talks about that as the player he would take in a heartbeat to play with any single time.
Traded away Brandon Saad, then brought him back.
Yeah, it wasn't the player who, you know, got rid of Brandon Saad. It wasn't John McDonough. I mean, sure, he signed off on those moves. But I'm sorry, the predicament that the Blackhawks find themselves in lays at the feet of one person and one person only, and that is Stan Bowman.
Well, he's the one that gave the twin contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they're albatrosses right now amongst that team.
And hey, you know, if I was a Blackhawks fan, and, you know, thankfully I'm not, but I'm sure I wouldn't trade the Stanley Cups in a heartbeat.
No, not at all.
Exactly.
But, you knew Coach was going to go there.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. And you know what? But again, that's 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
What have you done for me lately?
I mean, so again, it is one of those things that, you know, when does the rebuild happen? And do you try and continue to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic, or is it time to, you know, start looking at moving on from the Kane and Taves era? And that's coming.
You know, one thing that isn't really being talked about that might be part of this entire, you know, COVID-19 pausing the league, possibly losing half of a season in the playoffs and all of that. I wonder if this pause is going to make the mileage add up for some players. And some players, you know, like someone who I'm sure we're going to talk about later, Joel Ward, who all of a sudden who are near the twilight of their careers, who are going to say, you know what, screw it, I'm out.
You know what? And they may. And that's exactly where I was going to go next. Zach, thank you very, very much for the transition here. Coach, a guy that you know well, a guy that you coached, announced his retirement from the National Hockey League today. Coach, talk about a little bit about Joel Ward.
Oh, Joel he always showed up in the playoffs. That was his best time of year. That was when he loved it. That's when he did his best hockey. He's in front of the net. He scored big goals for us. Played a great, great two-way game for us. And Joel's a good guy. I didn't think he'd last as long as he did, but he had a great playoffs against Vancouver there, the last 11, I think it was 11.
Yep.
10-11, I think. And it was Vancouver, and he played great, and he scored goals, and he even mimicked a couple of the Vancouver players after he scored one of the goals. But He kept playing many years after I thought he was done because he had no speed, but he knew where to go. He knew how to get there. He was always a great teammate, and he did good in San Jose and wherever else he ended up in. But he did good for them, and it's been I was really happy that Joel had that many years playing, and he had a successful career, a very successful career.
If you have never checked out a website called the Players Tribune, There is a great article written by Joel Ward announcing his retirement on at PlayersTribune.com. Really, really interesting stuff written by players, by the people who play the game. Really, really fun stuff there. And he even talks about his time with San Jose. He talks about his time with Washington, and he also talks very, very fondly about his time in Nashville. And we look at the kids that we know he impacted, the influence he had on a lot of couple of members of the locker room staff. You know, were really influenced by Joel Ward, and you know, we want to wish Joel all the best in his retirement. He is certainly loved here in Smashville, and we're certainly glad that he. He got through, you know what, 786 games.
That's a lot.
For someone that wasn't drafted, didn't think he'd make it, didn't ever think, and was underestimated his entire career.
Well, I mean, also for a lot of people in Nashville, that was their first evidence of seeing a black hockey player here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't underestimate the kind of impact that that has on a community. It paves the way for players like PK Subban, for players like Evander Kane. You know, Joel Ward, especially, guy just had a nose for the net, and to come in, like you were saying, as an undrafted winger and to have an 11 season career like he did, it's just an inspiration to everyone who loves the game.
I tell you what, and again, we wish him all the best and thank him for his memory, certainly here in Smashville. We're just getting started. We have got the bag chucker extraordinaire, Skillsy himself, Hal Gill, joining us next right here on Slapshot Radio. But hold on just a second, because I got to tell you about our good friends at Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. Now, look, even though the office is not open right now, they are making plans to get the office back open again. You need to take care of your teeth. So Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry reminds you that, you know what, even though you maybe hold up in your place by yourself, even though no one's looking at you and going, oh, man, your breath is awful. No, you've got to take care of your oral health. You've got to take care of your teeth. And when we get back in, you got to make an appointment over at Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry with Drs. Jane Bacon and Aileen Kruger. You can check out their website at WeBrightenSmiles.com. Calling for an appointment at 872-7762. That's 615-872-7762. Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry. We brighten smiles. All right. I like it. I like it. Elijah, good start tonight. Good start, Elijah, on the Wheels of Steel back there on Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Paul McCann, the coach. Brent Peterson, the host. Zach McCann, coming at you every Monday night, 7 o'clock for Slapshot Radio. And you know what? It is not often we have a defensive legend on Slapshot Radio. I mean, it's intimidating. I have to admit, it is intimidating. So we are going to welcome, for the first time ever, to Slapshot Radio, the one and only color analyst for the Nashville Predators, right here on 102.5 The Game. Hal Gill joining us. Hal, welcome to Slapshot Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh,
nice.
I like that.
You know, like I feel like I'm forgetting to talk about hockey, and it's like it's my whole life, and it's all I have, and it's gone. but now here we are. So thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Hal, you know, since we have no hockey to really, you know, talk about, we're going to make stuff up. But anyway, Hal, how are you keeping yourself busy during this time? What are you up to? Are you honing your bag chucking skills? I mean, you know, like trying to keep Mason under control. I mean, what are you up to?
It's tough right now. Yeah, you know what? I do miss my broadcast crew. I miss hanging out with those guys. I miss being on the road and chucking bags. There's none of that going on now. It's all locked down. But I'm keeping busy. I'm teaching. Well, I don't know if you call it teaching, but I'm trying to help my 8-year-old through second grade so he can finish. I'm not sure if he's going to make it, but he's a smart kid, so I think he's going to carry me through it. I'm trying to watch out for the other two older kids that are seem to be on their own, and they know more. Now that I'm seeing it, they know a lot more than I ever did. So good for them. And, you know, I'm trying to stay busy. Good weather helps. I won't lie to you. Good weather helps. Today I did some mulching, and I was out in the yard, and that was a little bit of therapy for me. It made everything a little bit better.
You know, Hal, it's funny. As you're talking right now here in the palatial 102.5 The Game studios powered by Rumble On, it's funny. I actually look up on the TV, and it's the Fox Sports Carolina Classic right now, and whose face do I see but Hal Gill in a Bruins jersey right now?
Really?
Yeah, it's a playoff series between you guys and Carolina back when you were on the Bruins and paired with none other than Ray Bourque.
Yeah, that was a good one. I believe I don't want to ruin it for you, but I think Anson Carter might score the overtime winner in that one.
Well, we're still in the third, so you know we'll give it some time. Okay,
thanks, Hal. Right.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Sorry. But you have to be careful when you're watching sports because at any point right now, someone can burst your bubble and ruin the game for you.
Truth. But you know, Hal, I mean, obviously, before you came to Nashville, a storied career, over 1,100 games, six different teams. What was it like witnessing the NHL really transition throughout your time? I mean, you started the first year that the Nashville Predators were in existence, and you saw the career grow by leaps and bounds. What are some of your favorite memories from your really storied career?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. It was actually today. I'm sitting down, and you know, I think like everyone else, we're kind of going through all our stuff and weeding out what we don't need. And I went through and I saw 1,100 game puck. It was with the Preds, and I'll never forget because I got to the bench after I had a bad skate, and they said they announced it, 1,100 games, and I like waved and then ran back in to get my skate sharp. And so I, not that I really need to celebrate 1,100 games, but it was a cool moment. And I just kind of ran away from it. But yeah, you know, it's something I never thought would happen. I kind of was a underdog story the whole time. I just kind of kept going about my business, playing hard and trying to find my role. And eventually I found my role. And you talked about Ray Bourque. He was my first partner. And I jumped in with him. And he kind of showed me the ropes. And then I just kind of found a way to be a good, solid defenseman. And, you know, 1,100 games later, I did a lot of great things that I never thought I would do. It wasn't, everyone says it's their goal to play in the NHL and to play for a long time. And I don't know if that was ever my goal. I always loved hockey. I loved competing. I loved being on the ice and I loved practice. I loved working out in the gym. I loved being around the guys. And so I always wanted to do that. And to be able to do that for as long as I did in the NHL was certainly something that I never thought would happen, but I'm certainly, especially now, looking back, and when we don't have much to look at right now, I've been looking back and appreciating the Stanley Cup run in Pittsburgh and the run we had in Montreal, and watching watching the Preds replays, I miss hockey and I miss being around it, and that's really what I loved about it the whole time was just being around it.
Zach McCann, Brent Peterson, Paul McCann with you on Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game, talking to the radio color analyst for the Nashville Predators Radio Network, Hal Gill. Coach, you got a question for Skillsy.
Hey, Skillsy, good to hear you again. How good is 87, Crosby? How good is he? Is he just a good player? Is he a great, good player?
He's a great player. And it's nice to talk to you, Petey. I miss you, man. God, It's hard not going to the rink every day and hanging out and we sit down with Pete Weber and shoot the fecal matter, as he calls it. it's always nice to be around you, and I miss you. I can't wait to get back with you. But 87 Crosby is, you know what? I always thought he was just a whiner and a silver spoon player. You know, obviously he's a blue chip. He's the best player. Everything. that guy works harder than anyone. And I'm not talking about the gym. Everyone goes in the gym and says they work hard. But I'm talking about practice. When you get on the ice with him, the whole practice goes up another level. And not just him, it's everyone on the ice. He expects everyone to be at peak performance every time he plays. And so I find a lot of respect for a guy like that. You know, I have a funny story because we got into we won a game. I think it was 3-2. We got on the bus, and I'm having a couple beers, laughing it up. Hey, we won, and he was pouting, and I knew he didn't get any points. And I looked over, and I go, what are you doing, Sid? Like, I kind of got on him, and I said, why are you pouting? Like, that's ridiculous. You know, like, you didn't get your points. Relax. We won the game. That's all that matters. And he looked at me, and he goes, you know what? I had two chances to bury that game, and I never did. And I have guys out there blocking shots. One guy blocked a shot and might have broken his foot. We didn't know at that point, but he was hobbling around. At the end of the game, he blocked a shot, and he goes, he never would have blocked that shot if I just buried my chances. And that's the kind of weight that guy carries around with him. I've never said that in my life, never worried about scoring a goal. That for him, it's everything. To be able to put games away, to win games on his stick, that's what he's looking for. And so I found a ton of respect in that. You know, I initially thought it was a selfish, pouty player, but yeah. He will do whatever it takes to win. And it's not just about winning. It's about winning the right way. And he's put it on himself to score goals and to practice harder than anyone else. That's what makes him great. And, you know, Billy Guerin got traded to the team when we won the Cup. And he looked at Sid and was like, is this guy for real? Like, are we going to practice that hard? You know, Billy and I were getting old, and we're like, we kind of want to take it easy and practice. And that wasn't happening, not on Sid's watch. And so, you know, everything he's worked, obviously a great skilled player, but he's raised the level as far as leadership and as far as his work ethic. I have a ton of respect for that.
Hey, Hal, we're up against a break, but I'm hoping I can hold on to you for another segment. You feel like joining us for a second segment?
Well, I got a glass of wine, so there's no reason why I can't wait.
All right, fantastic. Well, we'll keep Hal on the line and keep him around for a second segment, because I do want to talk a little bit about the position of defense. And we've kind of dug into different positions during this quarantine. We've talked about goaltending. We've talked about, you know, a couple of other different positions. We haven't really gone into defense, so we want to pick Hal Gill's brain on the position of defense. That's going to be coming up right after this, right here on Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Elijah, not bad. Never go wrong with little Thin Lizzy. Never. Slapshot Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann, Zach McCann, Brent Peterson, and, of course, joining us for a second segment and probably a second glass of wine, Skillsy himself, Hal Gill. So, Hal, let's talk a little bit about the position of defense. And, honestly, you were blessed in a lot of respects to learn the game with one of the greats to play. You know, talk a little bit about Ray Bourque and what he taught you about the position and about being a professional.
it's actually kind of comical when you learn from a Hall of Famer like Ray Bourque. He once told me, he goes, when you're going up the right side, I always play the left, but he always told me, when you're going up the right side, push up towards the blue line on the breakout, and then draw the guy in like you're trying to get the red line, and then do a quick stop, cut back, and then you pull it backhand to forehand, and then you can hit the guy going through the middle or the weak side guy going through the neutral zone. And I looked at him, I go, Ray, you're maybe the best ever at that play. I'm not. So every time I talk to someone who's like, you have the best player teaching you the game, you know, the best players in the game do it a different way, you know, and that's the reason why they're the best, right? So, I took a lot from Ray. I took a lot from everyone I played with, and I kind of mashed it all in to make what I could do and how I could play. I think that's the most important thing is if you're a young defenseman, if you're a young hockey player in general, you kind of have to find your game and find your niche. And it's harder to do now. It's more of a skilled game. But, you know, Ray Bourque always told me you got to do everything hard. If you are going to make a play up the boards, it's got to be hard. Pat Burns was my coach my rookie year for my first three seasons, and he said the same thing. He said, I don't care if you ever make a pass on tape. Your job is to get the puck out of the zone. Now, if I did that nowadays, I'd be riding pine because everyone needs a puck-moving defenseman. But when it comes down to it, you need a guy that can get the puck out of the zone. You need a guy that can seal off a play and stop it and then move and get the puck out. So I really, you know, for better or for worse, I kind of tailored my game around my defensive side and taking away time and space, making good players uncomfortable and trying to keep it as simple as I could offensively. At the same time, you know, you have to do something. You have to make that first good pass, and you have to make a smart good first pass. It can't be through the middle unless you're positive that it's there. And I know Brent Peterson is curling his lip right now, like, dude, keep it out of the middle. You know, nowadays, guys need to make plays through the middle. You need to make the backhand shovel pass to your center. You need to make a smart play. I did that at times, but I really kept it simple. I didn't try to do too much. I wanted my forwards to get the puck, and I want to let them go to work. So I really tailored my game, blocking shots and doing all that, but really get the puck into my teammate's hand in a good position, and that's really what I focused on.
Slapshot Radio with Hal Gill. Zach?
Now, Hal, I mean, obviously, over 1,100 games, you have seen quite a few defensemen and really seen the position of NHL defensemen evolve throughout the years. Throughout your career, who would you say is, either this is, you know, someone you played with or played against, was kind of an unsung hero on the back end of the ice?
Oh, there's a lot. I feel like, you know, when I played with Rob Scuderi in Pittsburgh, we were not pretty. We were an ugly defensive duo, but we found a way to get it done. And I think that's what I respect about a good defenseman. I always said, if you didn't notice me, I did my job. You know, if I wasn't posterized by some all-star coming down and dangling me, then, you know, I did my job. And so when I look at the way the game was played, you know, Nick Lidstrom stands out as a guy that he was. I never found him as flashy as a lot of players. He never made a hard pass just because he was so smart and positionally aware. You'd get the puck, and it was always like an easy pass. I'm like, I can make that. I can make that play. He never took a big bomb from the point, but he had so many points off tips and rebounds on shots from the points. Those subtle little plays that he did night in and night out and cup after cup, that always impressed me. But there's a lot of defensemen that I watch. Ryan Ellis, I think, is one guy. You know, obviously we saw him come back this year and he was just getting into form. And, man, I thought he looked amazing. And he plays such a simple game. And I remember I got frustrated when I was playing with him. You know, he was my partner when I was with the Preds. He came up and, you know, he was my guy. And I said, kid, go join the rush because I need to play defense and you need to play offense. And the kid was never out of position. Mm-hmm. And he's still doing it. You know, he's playing with Roman Josi. And Yost does so many things so well and pushes up, but he's also got a nice little parachute back there with Ellis. And I think he does so many little things well on the penalty kill, on the power play. He's got a bomb of a shot, but he never really stands out, and especially compared to Roman Josi. Josi's all over the place and up in the rush and really driving the rush. But Ryan Ellis, just positionally, the way he plays, the subtle things that he does, that's what I call it D-porn, you know? It's like that's the stuff you want to look at, you know? If you're a young defenseman trying to learn the game, positionally and everything he does, he's right on top of it. I think he's probably one of the best positional defensemen in the game.
Oh, I don't think it's a hot take to say that you'd be hard-pressed to find a better pairing in this league than Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis.
No, that's the stuff. It was funny. I was, they're showing all the old clips, and they showed the 2009 Pittsburgh run, and it was at the end of the game, and, I got the puck and just put it off the boards, pass it off to someone, mm-hmm. and my daughter looked at me, and she's like, "What? Why didn't you join the rush? Like, why didn't you jump up? Like, Roman Josi would have been all up in there." I was like, "Yeah, well, I'm not Roman Josi, and I'm watching some of the stuff that Ellie and Yost do. I love those guys. They're great teammates. They're great people. But like, there's nothing better than watching those guys. Yost does stuff that I would never dream of doing, and Ryan Ellis does stuff that I would love to have done as well as he does. And that's kind of the difference. Ellie's just, he's not a big guy, but man, he covers so much space, and he's always square to the puck. If I could have played like that, I'd been playing a lot longer.
Slapshot Radio with the color analyst for the Predators Radio Network, Hal Gill. Coach.
Hey, Hal, you had a great career of 1,100 games. How did you end up in the broadcast booth after that, after you finished your career?
I never thought I would do that. I'm sure you'd say the same thing. You think about playing the whole time, and you were thinking about coaching, and I was thinking about I wanted to get into coaching, but I didn't want to make my family travel. We love Nashville, and so we kind of looked around at what options there were, and I was happy to come to Nashville and jump in and do it. I think you could probably say the same, Petey. There's no crash course. You just jump into it and get into broadcasting. And I don't know if I loved it at first, because I felt like, I was supposed to be playing the game, and I was kind of bitter about it, to be honest with you. I didn't want to talk about other players when I was supposed to be doing it. It was like, I always equate it to like, there's someone out there dancing with my prom date. I want to be doing that. I'm supposed to be out there. It took me a while to come around. I will say this is like the last year I kind of got into it. I got into watching the Preds, and not just broadcasting, but really like into the games and loving watching it. And as this year went along, I got into the playoff feel, where we were trying to fight to get in the playoffs. And that's when I really started to love it and loved calling the games and loved just being a part of it. I put my ego aside and started to love calling the game. So, it worked out well in Nashville, because we wanted to be in Nashville. My family was excited to come back. And, I'm happy that I could join a great organization and be around people like you guys and really help the game grow.
Your sense of humor and your podcasts are great. I love listening to you guys, and thanks for doing this. Just a great, great guy. Thanks a lot.
I would agree with that.
Absolutely.
So, Hal, we are up against a break. Thank you so much for spending some time with us tonight. We certainly appreciate it, and we wish you and your family all the best, and hopefully we can get back to playing some hockey fairly soon.
Amen. Hey, this is going to be over someday, guys, and we're all going to be back at it. Stay safe until then, all right?
All righty. Hal Gill, the color analyst for the Predators Radio Network, right here on the flagship of your Nashville Predators, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, don't forget now about our friend Carter Church from Weikart Realtors, the Andrews Group. Let me tell you a little bit about Carter. I've gotten to know him as we work together with the Predators. Carter's a Navy vet. He's got all the marketing experience you need to get your home sold fast in this really interesting market right now. You can call Carter today at 615-429-2044. That's 615-429-2044. Carter Church, your real estate professional if you're buying or if you're selling. And we'll be right back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Slapshot Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nashville's best sports talk. Paul McCann, Brent Peterson, Zach McCann coming at you. 1 hour of live hockey talk every Monday night, 7 o'clock. We're taking you all the way through, well, whenever. I mean, at this point, it's like...
I mean, heck, if there's hockey in July, I would hope we're on.
We're going to be talking about it, absolutely. So, you know, it's interesting to talk about the position of defense. And I'm kind of curious. Coach, when we start talking about defensemen, I mean, you were known as a defensive forward. But what defenseman really impacted – what defenseman impacted you either as a young player or you know, coming up into the league? I mean, obviously Bobby Orr was a big influence. But is there another defenseman that you can think of that either A, you looked at with a great deal of respect or influenced you?
Well, I was in the – I played in the old the Bruisin' League in the East there in Hartford, and we had to play like 8 to 10 games a year against Ray Bourque, and he was just phenomenal. He did everything, just like how we were talking with Hal earlier. He was a phenomenal player. He could make a backhand pass and landed on your stick, and he hit everybody with a great pass, just like Lidstrom does. Lidstrom was another guy that I played against Bourque, and I coached against Lidstrom, and so they're both great players, but Bourque could do everything. He'd go around, he'd score goals, he had a great shot, he was good defensively, he was physical, he could do everything, and Lidstrom just wasn't a physical player, but he was a very smart player, so two different guys, but those two guys sort of influenced me as a player and then as a coach later on.
You know, I often wonder when you talk about a player like a Ray Bourque or, you know, even when a great player goes into coaching, like when Gretzky went into coaching or, you know, Larry Bird coaching basketball. Do you ever wonder if, you know, someone like Gretzky who just saw the game so well would just look at the player and go, well, you just go here and do this. What's the big deal?
I know. I've had some really good players that were turned into coaches, and they just couldn't. They got frustrated because they couldn't make you do what that they could do so easily. You couldn't do, and it was just. I just said, forget it. Let me try to do my own thing. I got to do my own thing. I can't listen to you any longer.
I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. I mean, when you see the game at that kind of level, it's hard to communicate it.
Absolutely. And then you heard Hal talk about that. Mm-hmm. So, Zach, you know, from your perspective, talk about either a favorite defenseman, someone that always caught your eye.
You know, guy had a 20-year career, and most of his heyday was from before when I was watching him. But even going back and watching clips, he was always a player I noticed in his short tenure with the Flyers. Paul Coffey.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you talk about a legendary defenseman. You look at players like him, Eric Desjardins, kind of those 90s, you know, exact prototypical defensemen of that year, of that late 90s Flyers teams. I mean, those kind of guys, like, you were scared to go on their level of the ice for the most part.
And you know, Coffey is one that you always watched, of course, because you go back to his time with Edmonton and all that kind of good stuff. But I'm going to go more recent, and I will tell you because I think when you look at how much we watched him, and I think that, you know, one of the best defensemen I've ever seen play live is Shea Weber.
Absolutely.
When you look at a guy that took the offensive capability of, you know, pick your defenseman, take your offensive capability there, with a deadly slap shot and with a mean streak. I mean, it was, you know, coach, you coach Shea Weber, but when you have that kind of triple threat, that is just an unbelievable combination in a defenseman.
Yeah, he was, he's a terrific, not only that, he's got a triple effect on you, but he's a perfect person too, and a great guy. Very soft-spoken, didn't want to ever talk about himself.
True.
Always wanted to talk about the team, and he was just a great person. And so he's got the only thing Shea was missing was maybe the wheels of a, but boy, when he got, it took him a little longer to get going, but when he was going, he could track you down, boy. And like you said, a mean streak. What he did to Zetterberg there at the one end was pretty funny for everybody to laughing about it. But Zetterberg wasn't around the rest of the series, so that's kind of influence Shea Weber could have on a game and a situation.
You always wonder when a player's on the ice and everyone is aware he's out there.
Yeah.
That's always been Shea Weber to me, especially during his time in Nashville.
Well, also talk about a guy, you know, with leadership qualities that is, you know, that lead by example kind of captain.
Yep.
He very much is that, you know, I'm just going to do the right thing and you will do it as well, either by respect or through fear.
And absolutely. So, I mean, and it's funny because the defensive position, when you really think about it, I mean, you know, Hal said it in, you know, when we were talking about it, you know, a lot of times the best defensemen are the ones you don't notice.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that are always in right position. They're the ones that just never get exposed. They know where they're at. And what's interesting, though, is you always think of the position of defense coach is one that, you know, all right, you put the heavy kids in the back, you know, and I mean, but the reality is, you know, defensemen are normally the second best skaters on the team, backwards,
exactly,
backwards and forwards.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right, and Roman Josi shows us how he does it. He's an unbelievable skater. He can be the first guy in. He carries the puck in and lose the puck behind the net, and he can be the first guy back. That's how good a skater he is. So you're right. You have to like good defense and know they're very high hockey IQ. They know the game. They have their stick in the right spot. They've been taught by good players and good coaches where to put their stick, and they know exactly when to go down, when to block a shot. They're just so smart. And you can't be the guy that has skill and some smarts in this league.
Well, it's funny because I was kind of alluding to it when I was talking to Hal earlier. You've seen the role of the NHL defenseman really evolve over the last decade in hockey.
Evolve and diversify.
Absolutely. You have players like Roman Josi, Erik Karlsson, Brent Burns. You have players who have their defensemen leading the way when it comes to points and offensive production. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the Norris Trophy has almost turned into a, you know, how many gaudy points can you put up in order to win the thing lately? When was the last time you had a true defensive defenseman take the Norris?
It's been a little...
They should have two awards, one for the defensive defenseman, one for the other defenseman that all that just get points, but because some guys don't deserve that. Shea Weber was robbed
when Lidstrom got that one.
Yeah.
Robbed. That's right. Well, that's just because Lidstrom was on a good team at the time,
and
he scored a lot of points.
Exactly. And, I mean, I'm sorry you look at it. I think, I think Karlsson has gotten better defensively, but when he won the Norris, it was, you know, again, it was the best offensive defenseman. It wasn't the best defenseman. But it is interesting because, though, the position has diversified a little bit. You used to think the prototypical defenseman was the Shea Weber, the hulking guy that could move, that had the boomer from the point. But then you look at a Ryan Ellis.
You know what? And you can kind of mirrors the development of the quarterback position in football. If you think about it, look at how now you want your mobile quarterbacks, your guys who can extend plays with your legs, your Lamar Jacksons, your Carson Wentzes, all of those players who are just as deadly taking the ball up themselves as they are as gunning it down the field. And it kind of mirrors that way with hockey, if you think about it.
It is, absolutely. Well, guys, we've burned through another hour, man. Another hour of quarantine is done, thank heavens. We're back next Monday night at 7 p.m. Coach Zach, thanks so much, and thank you for joining us on Slapshot Radio. We're back next week at 7 p.m. A big thank you to our guest, Predators radio color analyst Hal Gill. And, of course, a big thank you to our sponsors, Hermitage Family and Cosmetic Dentistry, Carter Church from Weikart Realtors, the Andrews Group, your real estate agent in Murfreesboro, Cool Springs Wines and Spirits on Moores Lane in Cool Springs. They've got, you know, direct to your car, contactless, the whole nine yards. They'll deliver. Just call them. And, of course, our good friends at Lazy Boy Furniture Galleries. Shop online at lazyboy.com. They've got three locally owned Middle Tennessee locations. When you visit one of our sponsors, make sure you tell about him. You heard him on Slapshot Radio, and thank him for their support. For our producer, Elijah, our co-hosts, Brent Peterson and Zach McCann, I'm Paul McCann saying good night and good hockey.